They had a candlelight peace vigil at Camp Casey North at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Evanston. We begin with Al Zappala in the middle of his speech, speaking about his son, Sherwood Baker, who was killed looking for weapons of mass destruction that weren't there. The Bring Him Home Now bus tour in Chicago, Illinois.
And a building exploded, and he was killed. Well, okay, that's Sherwood's story. So what now? I mean, you know, we've been to Crawford, and now we're here. And people say, I'm preaching to the choir. Well, now it's time for the choir to start preaching to America. I can't tell you how to do it. Talk to your neighbor. Talk to your congressman. Try to get into the media as much as you can. But talk. We've been going to Washington. I met, along with Karen, who you just heard, with Walter Jones, a Republican from North Carolina. It was me, Karen, Celeste Zappala, Sue Niederer, all gold-style families. Walter Jones, if you remember, is the man who, at the start of the war, was incensed that France would not go along with us, and he changed in the cafeteria the name of French fries to Freedom Fries. I mean, this is how far off this guy was. Walter Jones said that if he knew now what he knew then, he would never have voted for the war. He said this around April. We called him up and say, what does that mean? What do you intend to do? And they said, well, we don't know what his stand is. So we said, we're going to come and see him. So we went, Karen, me, Sue, and Celeste. And he sat there and he cried with us. He had pictures of every soldier and military personnel that was killed in Iraq. He's the only congressperson that has sent letters of condolence to everyone. This is a conservative Republican from North Carolina. Now, if he can change, anybody can change. And that's what I'm asking you to do, is change those people. You know, there's still some Democrats that haven't even gone as far as he said. You know, all I have to say is I made a mistake. I listened to them. I believed in America. I believed in my president. He lied. But they can't say that yet. But they will say that. We need to pressure them. So that's my appeal to you. And that, I think, is the message of Crawford, is to bring it to you guys, and you guys bring it out and spread the word. Okay, September 24th, as many as you can, get out there. I love you, Evanston. Peace. I would like to introduce the next speaker, Juan Torres, who lives in Chicago.
Evening. Sorry by my Spanish accent. So, my name is Juan Torres. My son, same name, Juan Manuel Torres. He's died in Afghanistan, July 12, 2004. My history is very, very hard. It's so different because my son, he don't die by the French line. He's died inside the base of Bagram. The circumstance is very dark. The last time when I called my son is at 10 hours before he's died. He's so happy, daddy. I've been 12, 11 days. I've been Houston because my son is living in Houston. And I'm so happy because I'll be out soon. They called to the girlfriends 2 hours before he died. And the mother, any problem? But we received the news the next day, your son has died. I don't know what's happened, what circumstance. When they come into Dover, I told the military, I want to see my son in Dover. Say, no, sorry, Mr. Torres, you had to wait in Houston. Because you don't have a permission for go to Dover, it's only for a doctor or something. And after, and I say, a lot of people have a permission, father, soldiers. Okay, we were in Texas. We received the body of my son, the coffin, in 6 days. The military told me, Mr. Torres, your son's coffin is coming locked because your son, your head is out, completely out. And I say, okay, it's a Friday, I remember. On Saturday afternoon, I go to the funeral home and I talk to a lady, the name is Karen. Mrs. Karen, can I see my son? Say, I'm sorry, but I have an order in the military. It's locked, the coffin. I'm sorry, my son is dying. I want to see my son. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, Mr. Torres. And she's opened the coffin. The head is perfect. I see something for me shut right here in the back. May I take the autopsy? Yes, Mr. Torres, you are the father. After the funeral, Monday, a military ceremony, Tuesday. We talked to Karen for Wednesday for finish the paperwork, everything, around 10 o'clock. Okay, we go Wednesday. Karen, she don't work anymore. They fire. I will start saying, what's really happening? After 45 days, we receive the military autopsy. The military autopsy say, my son, he's suicidal. He's write the letter, suicidal letter, and he used his rifle. And in her body, have a lot of picture, family picture, something. And I say, oh, I don't think so. Because he's called me a couple hours before, to the girlfriend, couple hours, the mother too. Is everything's okay? Also, we have a picture with my son. He sent me 14 days before he signed, 14 days before he finished the military contract, a year. And the picture say he's scratching back the day for finish the military, 14 days. And after today, he's died. After the soldier is coming, to cover the real, a lot of information. So many soldiers, they call for public phone. They want to not mention the name. And many soldiers call for cell phone or email. And I say, we have a lot of proof. The military autopsy say he used his rifle. But I want the proof, the many proof we have. They say my son rifle, the next day is in base Fort Hood, Texas. Somebody sent a rifle to Texas. And a couple of friends, they check the rifle, never any bullet coming out. And I want all the people say, your son rifle, he was inside the hair locket. And one guy told me, I was with your son like 20 minutes before. I don't think so, he's suicidal. But you know, we have a, it's very extensive, you know, very big problem. But I said, last time he worked in 6 p.m. in the morning, I'm sorry, 6 p.m. in the afternoon to 6 a.m. in the morning, every day. And we go, the last day, July 11, he go to work. Say, no, Mr. Torres, go back to sleeping. I'm coming tomorrow 6 o'clock in the morning. The last 2 weeks, you stay work in the morning. When he go to the next day in the morning, go take a shower, he receives shot in the head inside the shower. And my autopsy is completely different of the military. Say, they say, contusion in the head and 9mm pistol. There's a lot of evidence to military, but they don't care. They don't care because they don't want to be open one more case like Abu Ghraib or whatever. But my son, he didn't answer many times about the problem, the drug in the, inside the base. And many soldiers say, "Your son," they talk to me, they talk to a lot of friends, "don't use the drug, because when you go back to America, you will be in problem, trouble." So my son, he don't drink in anything. But when I talk to him, "what do you say to the friend?" He said, "don't say nothing, be careful. Maybe somebody..." "No, daddy, I don't think so, nothing happened, because it's American soldier. It's all bases. I don't think so, nothing happened." But yes, happened. Now, my American dream, I came from Argentina. I working very hard. My wife too. My daughter, he was professional. She's an architect. And my son, he was accounting, CPA. And this is, he's serving the base, the bad part on the base, logistic. He control everything in the base, coming in and out. Okay, now he's dying. But the military, they don't care. Maybe because I am Spanish. And my American dream, I came into this country for American dream, I very touched with my hands. Because I got my two kids professional. We have a wonderful job. And now my American dream is in the ground forever. This is my new mission. It's educate to the kids in the school, special to my community, Spanish. Because my son started the school at 17 years old. He recruited to Kosovo. And I say he got a less or 18 years old. So now he's died. I didn't try, they don't care. They lied to my son. This is now I communicate to the kids why the military they lie. So I don't want to see no more family die in this country. Especially I don't see no more kid. Because the kid he left, he going. But the family stay here. It's over 1,800 die in Iraq and 234 in Afghanistan. Over 2,100 family is died forever. The president, they don't care because it's not her family. It's not her body. His blood is different. And I say thank you. Thank you for paying attention. And I invite everybody to go to Washington because we need to stop this war. Thank you.
I'd like to introduce Loretta Capehart, who is from this Chicago area, and she's also a Gold Star.
Thanks, and thank everybody for coming out here today. This is actually my only second stop with this tour. I haven't been able to get on the bus. But I was down at Camp Casey this summer, and I have to tell you, it's the most inspiring thing I've seen since we shut down Lakeshore Drive here in 2003, and I really thought that was going to be the highlight. If you didn't make it to Camp Casey, you're seeing a little bit of the spirit here tonight. And as a Gold Star aunt, I lost a nephew in Iraq in January. But I'd like to just talk a little bit about what Gold Star Families has meant for us, beyond the support that we can give each other. For these very real losses that we and our families have suffered, I think what keeps us moving ahead and coming to events like this and speaking with everyone, because these are hard stories to tell, is the hope that we see in building a movement that can end this war. When we look at the history of the Vietnam War, we look at the history of this country, we see that the thing that ends oppression, that ends injustice, are people like you coming out and standing up and demanding that this thing end and that it end now before another person's child has to die. At Northeastern Illinois University this afternoon, where I teach, the tour made a stop, and I think it had a huge impact on our students there. I know it had an impact on our administration. They had refused to allow the display of dog tags representing the soldiers lost in Iraq, the U.S. soldiers lost in Iraq, had taken that down right before Memorial Day this last year to the great disheartenment of those of us who had lost family members and to the Vietnam veteran on our campus who put that display together. Today, I don't know if it was shame, I don't know if it was a change of heart, I don't know, it was just seeing the real faces of what these dog tags represented, but the administration decided that they would go ahead and let us put those dog tags back. So once again on our campus, we'll have a daily reminder of the cost of this war. And I think it's especially important on our campus. It's a working class campus, the most diverse campus in the Midwest. And unfortunately, that means that we have military recruiters on our campus constantly trying to take our students and send them to Iraq to war. And we have to stand against that continually. This week, our students with the Campus Anti-War Network are putting together a College Not Combat campaign, and today was really the way to set that off for students to see the real cost of this war and what how important it is that we stand against it and demand that this war end and that it end now. Many people have spoken about the mixed up priorities in this country, and I think our students on our campus are starting to see this. It's hard not to see. When you see poor African American people, poor white people, poor Latino people literally drowning in New Orleans, when we had the wherewithal to prevent that, when we had the people to prevent that, when we have the machinery to prevent that, and instead all of those things that we need here at home are abroad killing other people's children. The contradictions are just too stark to look away. And we have to continually talk about that, continually talk about what the priorities are and what they should be. And I think that the strongest message we can send and that we send continually is that we want the troops out and we want them out now. So let me just say, troops out now.
We have a Blue Star wife whose husband is about to be deployed. Please welcome Tamara Rosenleaf.
Hi, my name is Tamara Rosenleaf and I've traveled all the way from Helena, Montana to be here with you tonight. I spent 22 days at Camp Casey. And I've been 7 days on this tour, and I will be on this tour all the way to the end and at that march in Washington. It's quite different to be a military wife than it is to be a mom or a dad of a soldier. Because a mom and a dad, they never need to ask the permission to act in the best interest of their children. But we all know that a marriage is a contract. And that in order to act, you have to have the support of both parties. So it's important for me to say that I'm not standing here by myself. My husband is here with me. You just don't see him. He's at Fort Hood, where he's getting ready to deploy in November. My husband knows that this war is wrong, and he also knows that he's going to go. And he's going to go because he thinks that he has to go, because he has to take care of his buddies. If he doesn't go, someone else could die in his place, and he could never stand to think that that might happen. So he's going to go. And when he goes, he knows that he takes a terrible gamble. When I was a little girl, I used to watch my grandma sitting at the kitchen table crying with three sons in Vietnam. And now I'm that same woman. And I sit at that table and I cry and I wonder if he's going to be okay. And the worst part is, I know that he might come back whole in his body, but he'll never be the same in his mind. And one of the things that is so damaging to marriage is when the coupleness of it is gone, when the shared experience is no longer there. And it's already, the military has already separated him from me in that regard. we don't think the same way anymore because it's just impossible for me to see, you know? Please don't go, baby. That's all I know what to say. Please don't go. And he says, I have to. When I was at Camp Casey, every day I walked miles in that camp, and every day I passed this display that I never wanted to look at, and yet I could never stop. And it was a display of the wounded soldiers that have come back with their legs blown off, their hands blown off, burnt and disabled. And every day I would go and stand in front of that thing, and I would beg God for the courage to help me stand by my husband if that's how he comes back to me. I met a vet there whose fingers were blown off, whose leg was blown off, and whose arm was twisted. He was burnt. His entire torso was burnt, and he came to see us at night because he was too ashamed to let us see him in the day. And he said that he was too ugly for his wife to be with, and so she left. He was 25 years old. It's hard, it's really hard for a woman to figure out how to wrap your mind around that kind of a reality. And as hard as it is, you know, I can understand why they make the choice to go, why they make the choice to leave. I want to think I'll be brave enough or that it won't happen to me, but the fact is it's happened to a lot of people and I can't hang on to that. So the other thing I'd like to say is one of the reasons why people listen to what we say is because we have what they call skin in the game. And it's true, we do. But if you don't think you do, then you need to look at those crosses because you have 76 of them here. And you do have skin in the game because those were your children. And they would have touched the lives of who knows how many people in this community. They would have been doctors, they would have been social workers, they would have been teachers, and now they're gone. And the lives that they would have touched are forever untouched. So when people tell you, you don't have a stake in it, you tell them, they lie, you do. Thank you.
We're not all through the bus riders yet, and I think you can agree with DeKalb Fonda earlier when she said, there may be celebrities out there who get attention, but we have some very profound witnesses before us testifying to the pain and loss of this war, the stupidity and unnecessary loss of this war. And I want to welcome one more of them, Sherry Glover, who's also a Blue Star family member.
Thank you. As you can hear, my voice has been used quite a bit lately. My name is Sherry Glover. I am from Houston, Texas. And I was at Camp Casey before it was ever Camp Casey. Some of us have been talking about a little running joke between us all. We didn't know we were coming until we got there. I could never imagine in my wildest dreams that I'd be here tonight, looking at all the stars on the ground in your hands. So I am a Blue Star mother. I have a son-in-law who's stationed in Tel Afar right now. My son-in-law and my daughter have just given me my first grandchild, a little girl. She's 4 months old, so thank you for bringing your babies out here tonight, too. It's very important that they're here, because I feel like what we're actually doing and not taking action to stop this is passing on the debt to my granddaughter and your kids and your grandchildren and their children. So I'm not going to be too winded. We've had a pretty long day, but first I want to share a little bit of information with my fellow journeyman who I've been traveling with for several days now, and some of them a couple of months going on. I've been talking to my daughter, who's an individual ready reservist. I stand the risk of my only daughter being redeployed, because she was told that when she separated to have her child, don't worry about it. We don't call the reservists until there's nobody left. And we do this before we implement the draft. So if they do that, my daughter and her husband have to relinquish legal custody to someone. Is it going to be me? So to my fellow speakers and my journeymen, just a couple of you know that as we were returning from one of the school gigs we had today, I was listening to Air America on the radio, and I put a couple of puzzle pieces together. My daughter's been telling me for a couple of days that my son-in-law, Chris, has been telling her, he's called her, and he said, "Baby, there's going to be two or three weeks I'm not going to be able to talk to you. So I just want you to know when I don't call, there's a reason for it. And I can't tell you why. And I don't know how long it's going to be before we talk again." So I'm in the car coming back to dinner, listening to Air America. And by the way, be careful what you're listening to on the media. Listen for the truth, please. Please. Because really, that's all any of us can do is just speak the truth. And that's all we're really doing. So I hear all of a sudden this announcement that there's some sort of flurry of activity that's going on. And there are some units up in the northwest quadrant of Iraq that are getting ready to go out and stop a resistance of insurgents that are coming across the Euphrates. Well, my son, this is Syrians coming across the Syrian border. My son-in-law is 60 miles south of that border right now. So all of a sudden it came together for me why he's not going to be calling in a few weeks, and why he can't tell us why, and where I'm hearing the truth about what's really going on. And I don't want to be a gold star mother. I'm a Blue Star granddaughter. My grandfather was a soldier. I'm a Blue Star mother, and I'm a Blue Star daughter. My father was an airman. I'm a Blue Star wife. My husband is a disabled Marine. And I have a Blue Star granddaughter at home. And she doesn't want to be a gold star grandbaby. I think that these are the most heart-wrenching engagements that we have. When we come to the memorials and we see these crosses, it seems to be the most difficult. And yet we speak from our hearts all day long. And we're just telling you the truth. And we're just like you are, and we're really not that special, but we're just telling the truth, and you deserve to have it. So now, to all of you that are here tonight, this goes to you, because you are who we are. And after we're gone, I'm going to count on you to take our place in your community. The last Saturday at Camp Casey. I stood on a stage before a couple of thousand people. And I recited a poem. And Cindy was sitting on the front row. So I invite each of you now to look into your candles and listen for the truth in this 2,000-year-old Chinese poem. Go to the people. Learn from them. Love them. Start with what they know. Build on what they have. But of the best leaders, when the work is done, the task is accomplished, the people will say, we have done it ourselves. You people go out there in Chicago and y'all get it done. Thank you very much.
Stacy Bannerman is also a Blue Star family member from Washington. Please welcome her. In Flanders fields, the poppies blow. Between the crosses, row on row, that mark our place. And in the sky, the larks, still bravely singing, fly, scarce heard amid the guns below. We are the dead. It's the first part of Flanders Fields. I memorized it when I was in third grade. I have no idea why. I also wrote a Bill of Rights for my elementary school in third grade. And it wasn't until I was standing with some of the friends that I've made ever since my husband got mobilized and then deployed to Iraq. It wasn't until I was standing with some of the friends that I've made in the last 2 years at Arlington Midwest, watching as they planted white crosses in the ground in remembrance of their dead kids. And at that moment, I knew. It seems that perhaps there was a part of me that knew even then that this, right now, was a possibility. We could have gone another way as the nation. And I look around now and I see that perhaps some of you have done this before. Around 40 years ago, we were supposed to have gotten the lesson then, and clearly, we did not. But one of the things I've come to understand about the universe and how it works is you keep getting another chance. Some people have given their lives so that we could have another chance to get it right this time. So some of the friends that I've made in the past 2 years are Cindy Sheehan. Cindy
You're all aware of what she's done at Camp Casey. It was the first Sunday in April that Cindy and her family was sitting down for dinner. And as all of us in the military do, she's got something of a love-hate relationship with the media. Often that's the only way we can get our news. And this evening, that's how she got her news. They were eating dinner and watching CNN as footage rolled of the April 4th attack in Sadr City. And they saw Casey be killed. Now, they tried to talk themselves out of it, as anyone would. That can't be right. That can't be right. Dear God, that cannot be right. My baby did not give his life for this war based on lies. So she left the house and took the dogs for a walk. And when she came back home, the officers in uniform were on her front step. Bill Mitchell's son, Mike Mitchell, he was killed that day too, April 4th, 2004, in Sadr City, Iraq. I asked Bill, I said, Bill, how did you find out about your son's death? You see, this is something I normally wouldn't ask, but let me tell you. When you've got a loved one in a war, the normal no longer applies. And I was saying to a friend of mine as we were traveling down the bus just the other day, driving down the road, I said, you know, clearly this world has gone crazy if us doing this feels so sane. And so Bill Mitchell, he got a phone call and they said, Mr. Mitchell, this is the Department of the Army. We need to ask you to come home, please. And what, they're thinking he's not going to know? The Army's got a very strict policy that you do not inform anyone of a loved one's death over the phone. But of course Bill knew, and he said, what, why, what's going on? And she said, sir, I cannot tell you, sir. Please just go home. Officers will meet you at your house. And Bill said, no, God damn it. You tell me now, you tell me now, is my son dead? And she said, yes, sir, I'm sorry, sir, he is. Another friend that I've met this last year told me about her 20-year-old daughter returning to a reservation in Wisconsin with PTSD so severe that she's tried committing suicide 3 times now. She's taken a large kitchen knife and gouged her chest. Another friend of mine informed me of a young Marine wife who is now a very young Gold Star wife. This woman, I was with her on the Chasing Cheney bus tour. Perhaps some of you went to that, where a group of us, the Band of Sisters, flew all over the swing states in the week leading up to the presidential election. Wherever Dick Cheney, the profiteer, spoke, we followed. And we told the real story about what was going on. So one of my friends on the tour informed me that a friend of ours, a young Marine wife, how she learned that her husband had been killed in the battle in Fallujah. Apparently, this young woman was giving a birthday party for their baby girl who had just turned 1 year old. And the doorbell rang, and the young woman went to answer the door, and smoke from the birthday candles was still wafting in the air. When she was informed that her daughter's father, her beloved husband, was dead, killed in the battle in Fallujah. So, and what fascinates me, I'm pretty sure, folks, we take a look at some before and after pictures of Fallujah in Louisiana, and the destruction and devastation is not going to be that dissimilar. They are both going to have buildings flattened, dead bodies lying around, wounded, uncared for. And we're asking ourselves, well, gosh, where's the guard? Why aren't they in Louisiana? That's because they're in Iraq. We want to know why more wasn't done to prevent the horrible tragedy in Louisiana. We seem to have a much more difficult time asking ourselves why more wasn't done to prevent the horrible tragedy in Iraq. We don't get so worked up about that. Right before I got on the plane to come here, there was a video in Seattle, Washington. This happened in downtown Seattle. Two veterans of the Iraq War, recently returned, were taking their wives out for a night. And they were peacefully minding their own business when several street thugs beat them up badly, breaking bones, kicking them. And this happened on a major street in Seattle. And the video footage shows this happening, and it shows a stream of cars driving by. Nobody stopped to help these veterans. And I thought, isn't that interesting? You know, much of this country is driving by this war. Our veterans are coming back, and the government and the military is beating and brutalizing and bullying them. And what I know is this, that a bully is a coward in disguise. The men and women of this country and Iraq who have paid with their lives and their limbs deserve so much better. If we've got a moral responsibility to alleviate suffering, and most assuredly we do, in this country, obviously, for our beloved fellow Americans in Louisiana, and for peoples around the world, if we've got a moral responsibility to alleviate suffering, then surely we are spiritually ordained not to inflict it. People, be the light. Thank you.
Is Cody Camacho? Cody Camacho has also been traveling with the bus. He's an Iraq vet. He's from Chicago. Would you like to speak? Okay.
I guess I'll read a speech. This isn't a noble cause. This is a nobility cause. That nobility cause is intricately worked out to benefit the wealthy. They are exploiting the insecurities of our own country, all in the name of big business. If we are liberating Iraq, then why is it still necessary to go door to door, kicking in those doors and destroying Iraqi lives based on the random chance of finding insurgents? Why are soldiers ordered to point weapons at women and children? Show me proof of any reconstruction being done there. If the Iraqis were so happy about us being there, I'm sure they'd be on CNN and Fox News every 5 minutes. Yeah. Show me a picture of U.S. troops working to rebuild any community there. I've seen horrible things that prove to me otherwise. I saw us protecting government contractors that are getting paid hundreds of thousands of dollars apiece for doing jobs the military is trained and very capable of doing. Oil costs an arm and a leg these days, and for countless soldiers and Iraqis, I use the term literally. The atrocities are ripping apart families of not only Iraqis, but American troops as well. Why is our defense budget being handed over to companies when our soldiers don't even have adequate supplies or armor? Yeah. If we're rebuilding Iraq, why can't they export their own oil? Why seems to be the word that crosses our minds over and over again? Why are our troops being poisoned with depleted uranium? Meanwhile, VA hospitals are being closed across the nation. What is money really worth in all of this? As of yet, 55,000 vets of the first Gulf War have died as a result of the toxins we put in our weapons. Children are being born deformed as a result of poisons that might or might not exist in veterans' bodies. It's time to stop avoiding the lies and confront this administration. It's time for the people to take their country back from the corporations. It's time to express our outrage that America has been hijacked and to let the people have a reason to say they are proud Americans again. Yeah.
These folks have had a very trying and long day, and they've been giving us so much. I don't know about you, but I feel like this has been a very precious moment together here, and that there are very few of those, that they have opened their hearts and their minds and their spirits to us. And if there's one message that they've been given to us, is that they want us to pass it on. That what we have experienced tonight, learned tonight, felt tonight, we need to pass it on. But I think before we pass it on out there, we need to pass it back to them. We need to give something back to them. As I said before, they took a leap of faith from Crawford, Texas, to around the country in a month to Washington, D.C. They got seed money, but that's it. And they said, we're going to do this and hope that at every stop, somebody will take care of us to get us a little more along the way. We have here tonight these buckets, which will be passed through the crowd as Kristen Lems sings to us tonight. One more song. And I hope that you can be as generous to them as they have been generous to us in telling us their stories and sharing their hearts with us.
I can't help but feel, standing here this evening, that we are indeed on hallowed ground, not only because of what we've learned from the Gold Star mothers and fathers and Blue Star wives, but also because 40 years ago this year, I remember very well that Martin Luther King spoke inside this church as part of Freedom Summer, North Shore Freedom Summer. And I was a 14-year-old girl at the time. And this entire space is hallowed by the presence of all of these great Americans. Please write the checks to Veterans for Peace. Okay. And I'd like to teach you this song as those cans circulate. This is a union of some words that Martin Luther King spoke and the song Kumbaya. So it should be very easy to learn and remember. And it goes like this. Come my ear, Martin Luther King. Repeat. Come by here, Martin Luther King. Come by here, Martin Luther King. Come by here, Martin Luther King. Your words we sing. Repeat. Your words we sing. Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Repeat. Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Only light can do that. Hatred cannot drive out hatred. 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 Only love can do that. Only love can do that. Vengeance cannot heal our pain. 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 Only justice can do that. Only justice can do that. Come by here, Martin Luther King. 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 Your words we sing. Your life we sing.
From the Unitarian Universalist Church of Evanston, the Bring 'Em Home Now bus tour.